Welcome into the Let It Fly podcast, part of Jays 24/7. Ravi Lula and Taylor Stormborg here with you. T Storm, how you doing, man?
I'm good, Ravi. How are you, brother?
I'm doing good. It's been busy around here, not just for us personally, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point, but it's been a busy Creighton athletic schedule, not just men's basketball, but across the board. It's been kind of crazy.
Yeah, really has. Yeah, we were just talking before we hopped on about the men's soccer score up 3-1 at halftime against number 4 Duke, playing for a chance to go to the Final Four. And then, you know, we're talking about women's basketball being a real contender, right? Not just potential top 10 team, but a real contender, beating Villanova, top 25 team on the road by 20 plus points.
Yeah, Flan squad is not messing around this year. They're getting after it. They already had the good wins at South Dakota State, against Nebraska, and they're in this stretch here that's going to be really, really challenging for them. But if they can come out of it and, you know, be healthy and have gotten some wins, I mean, they're undefeated right now. That's not practical moving forward, just judging by, I mean, it's not practical for anybody in college basketball, right? But just looking at the slate moving forward, they've got some real challenges. They go at Stanford, they got UConn at home, and then they go at DePaul here at the kind of end of this month, which is probably as hard of a stretch as anybody will face all year, if we're being honest. Like, you're talking about top five teams, and then DePaul, who's generally very good as well, two of those three on the road. But the bright side of that is you get through that stretch, you get to March, and nothing faces you, right? So that's a positive if you're Flan squad. And let's be honest, they could knock a couple of those teams off. You know, I wouldn't put it past them to be able to. I think that the confidence they got from, like, beating Iowa and Iowa State last year in the NCAA tournament just gave them the confidence to be like, okay, there's none of these teams are really that much better than us, you know? I think it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, completely agree. And I mean, very similar to kind of the grueling schedule that the men have faced over the last 2 weeks as well. Right, with basically four top 25 teams back to back to back to back. Now, women's turn, right, being ranked number 13 in the country right now, but just being another top 25 opponent. And like you said, on the road against some really tough women's squads at Stanford and DePaul, and at UConn. I mean, hey, you never know what could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the men's squad. We'll hop over there now. This stretch was always the stretch that we were, I think, going to find out what this team actually was, at least at this point in the season. I do like to remind people that 19-20 team that by the end of the year was killing people and was absolutely a Final Four quality squad got absolutely boat raced by San Diego State over Thanksgiving. So you can't put a ton of stock into these things, but I will say I do think we learned about the overall ceiling of what this team can be. What did you learn from the Maui and Texas kind of four game stretch?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, I mean, it's very rare, right? First time in Creighton history where you've got to go four straight games against ranked opponents, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got to keep that in mind, and as we talk about that, you know, we got to keep that. We got to talk about it through that lens, right? I thought that Arkansas, you know, Texas Tech game was what it was, right? You turn the ball over 13 times in the first half, and then come out and turn it over zero times in the second half, and that's the adjustment you needed to make. You made it, and you know, you won that game pretty handily. Mm-hmm. I thought that Arkansas-Creighton matchup in round two, that second day in Maui, was probably one of the most intense college basketball games that you will see all season long, quite mm-hmm. frankly. Some really high-quality shot making was happening. Some athleticism was on display, and really just a grinded-out, gutted-out game. I thought the officiating in that game, I didn't quite think they were ready for that. What were your thoughts on that, Robbie? I think, you know, this early in the season, it's hard to ref a game of that physicality, that caliber. We've got so many talented guys, so many athletic guys on the floor, and I just thought that, you know, the guys in black and white did a subpar job.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was on just an overall bad performance, though. I didn't think it was necessarily like biased one way or another, or like somebody was getting that either side was getting the short end there. I thought it was just a poorly managed game from the officials.
Yes, and yes, that's exactly what I thought too.
And incredibly inconsistent. I mean, that Baylor Shireman charge call was one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. Just full stop. It just was. especially when you consider the amount of physicality that Arkansas was allowed to play with on defense. It's like, okay, I need some level of consistency on how much contact's allowed here. So that was frustrating. But, you know, I know the Arkansas fans were complaining a ton. Number one, if you play defense like that, you're going to have a lot of fouls called on you. That's just how it is. Like, that's how it works. Number two, until they started fouling, until Arkansas started fouling because they were behind, the free throw discrepancy was a whopping two. It was 19 for Creighton, 17 for Arkansas. And since you were the more physical team in Arkansas, the fact that you had only shot two fewer free throws than Creighton before you started fouling, I think you should be more than thrilled with that number. So Arkansas fans are going to be Arkansas fans. That's just kind of who they are across the board. But overall, I agree with you. The officiating in that game was not prepared, I think, for the high level of play and athleticism that we were dealing with. So that was a little bit frustrating and really the only blemish on an otherwise incredible basketball game. Mm-hmm. I thought against Arizona, and I will say, I thought of the four teams in this stretch, I thought Arkansas was the most difficult matchup for Creighton. The combination of the athleticism, the skill level, the length, the way they play defense was, to me, the worst matchup for Creighton. I thought Texas might be, but they didn't end up... I didn't think they were as disruptive defensively as Arkansas was. I thought Creighton got really good looks against Texas, and I'm sure we'll get to them, but just didn't make any of it. So I thought winning that game, considering I thought it was the worst matchup against maybe the highest talent level, because Arkansas has more NBA guys than Texas does. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. They've got two guys at least that'll be in the draft this year. So, and one of them didn't play in Nick Smith, but you've got a couple guys that will be in the draft this year. So I thought that was interesting. And I was really happy that Creighton got the win there. The Arizona game, honestly, stylistically, I thought was going to play much better into Creighton's hands, and I think it did. I just thought Creighton was gassed from having played those types of Texas Tech and Arkansas back-to-back.
Yeah, I agree, and you could see it from the get-go. I mean, it's not like it happened in the second half, late in the second half, they were tired. I mean, it was first half where, you know, Arizona went on, I want to say it was either a 12-0 or 13-0 run. Kind of in the, like, that under eight timeout happened. And Creighton was basically scoreless for north of 5 minutes to finish that first half. And, you know, if you look at the two losses, right? I mean, we are 0-2 in our last two contests. But if you look at the last two games, it really comes down to just two stretches, two media timeout stretches. It's that under eight in the Arizona game where they go on a massive run and blow that thing open, and now Creighton is playing from behind. And then in Thursday night's game, it's Trey Alexander steps up to the free throw line after a media timeout in the second half. He makes 35 and 36 at the free throw line. Creighton's down one, 36-37. Texas goes on a 10-0 run in the next media before the next media stretch in that 3 minutes and 55 seconds, and now it's 47-36. And again, Creighton playing from behind. And so, really, it was a total of 8 minutes, 9 minutes of basketball. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes what happens, right? And we've heard,
especially against high level competition. Yeah.
Yes. And we've heard Mac talk. I heard him talk about this on the post game on Thursday night, but when you're not making shots, your margin for error is incredibly thin, and mm-hmm. you cannot make defensive mistakes. You can't turn the ball over, right? And you can't let timely shots happen. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what Texas did, is they just made some big shots and big moments. Because they did not play well either. Let's be honest about that.
Yeah. So I didn't think Creighton played particularly well against Arizona or against Texas. I thought it was kind of a miracle that, I mean, Arizona's number four in the country now. Texas was two when they played them. And the fact that Creighton had a shot to tie or take the lead in either of those games with under a minute left was shocking to me with how poorly I thought they played. Starting with Arizona, and I think part of this was fatigue, because I think the focus went first with Arizona, is they just let Ballo go absolutely crazy, because every time Kalkbrenner would step up, no one was there to cover him. And that was an absolutely unacceptable lapse of rotation on defense. Like, if you want Kalkbrenner to protect the rim, you have to have his back when he steps up on a driver. And they didn't do it. And the same thing, you had the similar issues against Texas, although not quite as bad. But, I mean, those were half of Ballo's points were on things, just simple things like that, where whoever was that next guy just didn't rotate down. And, you know, depending on who you have coached with or played under, whatever, you know, I call it help the helper. It's just a simple rotation defense where whoever is on that backside from the furthest guy away from the ball has to drop down to protect the rim. And they're not a true rim protector the way Kalkbrenner is, but they have to have a body in there, take a charge, do whatever, in order to keep Ballo from just running free to the rim and dunking on people when Kalkbrenner leaves to go protect the rim on a driver. So mm-hmm. obviously you'd love it if the defense could keep the drivers from getting to that point. That's not always possible. But the fact that nobody was stepping up on those rotations to help out Kalkbrenner, Mac had to be losing his mind, because that's simple, simple stuff. And I do think I think fatigue was a big thing there, and just losing focus. But man, that was really frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it was tough to watch. And I think the other half of Ballo's points came from just incredible early work in the post. Mm-hmm. I mean,
his positioning early was really, he was
buried Kalkbrenner in the mm-hmm. post, and Frederick King, and just beat him down the floor and then just put him under the rim. And, you know, at that point, you know, you're shooting a little 2 foot jump hook shot, and instead of being pushed out to, you know, 7, 8, 9 feet, it's a lot different game when, mm-hmm. you know, when you're 7 foot, you know, 265, 270. I mean, he was a load, and that was the first time, honestly, it was the first time I've seen Brian Kalkbrenner look inferior, maybe the right word there, but he didn't look like his normal self. And I think a lot of that had to do with it being the third game after two really physical matchups. He had that twisted ankle, the same one, two times early in the week. And, but, again, give credit to Arizona. I mean, they said, hey, okay, Big East Defensive Player of the Year, we're going to come right at you. And they did. It was tough. And it was tough to watch, and it was tough to stop. And then, again, Creighton playing from behind has kind of been the theme in the last two games, where they're not dictating the pace. They're not controlling the outcome of the game. They are the ones that they're chasing down everything. And it's just so mm-hmm. hard to do that against teams that are, you know, both ranked in the top five in the country.
Yeah, and I thought that in particular, I thought Kalkbrenner did a really good job kind of correcting the positioning error in the second half, especially. But by that point, Ballo had 15 points or 17 points or whatever it was. And, you know, you'd kind of let the thing, you'd missed an opportunity, because I thought there was an opportunity against Arizona early where Creighton kind of could have expanded the lead a little bit, and Ballo just kept getting really easy buckets. So credit for making that adjustment, but it did kind of put you behind the eight ball in the first place. As far as Texas goes, you had some similar things in terms of rotation, not nearly as bad as Arizona. But the story of that game is just they just couldn't shoot the ball. I mean, there was like a startling amount of air balls, which I don't know that I've seen from Creighton maybe ever. It was, I don't know. My thought was, because that's a new building, there has to be something weird with the sight lines of that building. Because I don't, like, sometimes Creighton has off nights, but it doesn't look like that.
No. And they had shot. I mean, they shot in the gym on Wednesday. They went and did a shoot around on Thursday morning before the game. So it's not like they hadn't adjusted to that. But, you know, again, they're going from playing in a, you know, quote unquote, high school gym in Maui. Right.
Yeah. And super shooter friendly. Shooting the,
shooting the lights out of the ball. Right. And not even just friendly rims, but just, I mean,
friendly environment. Bottom of
the mat. Yes. And then going to Texas into the new arena, and you know, all the hype was that this Texas defense just throws people for a loop. You have no idea how to make, you know, how to actually execute your offense, right? They had 20, I think they're averaging about 21 turnovers a game heading into Thursday. It was 20.6 or 20.7 turnovers a game, and they turned Gonzaga over 20 times in that same building a few weeks earlier. But Creighton just missed shots.
I mean, Creighton only had eight turnovers.
Eight turnovers. At one point, 18 straight missed threes.
So yeah, they were for 22, I think. One for 22 before Baylor started making a couple at the end there to keep it, to make it interesting. But so that's why, like, I know they got to shoot around a little bit. I have to think there was something about the building that wasn't, that was, made it difficult for them to shoot. Because, I mean, Baylor started 0 for 9. This is like a, this guy shot almost 50% from 3 last year. He, it was shooting 50% from 3 this year. Like, that's something, I there had to be something else going on there. Especially the way the misses looked. But, I mean, I will give Texas's defense some credit, but Creighton was getting wide open looks. Like, I liked the looks that Creighton got. I said this at the start, I didn't think Texas's defense was nearly as disruptive as I was expecting it to be.
No, it really was not. And, you know, guys like Allen and Dussault, like, those guys can be incredible on the defensive end. Tyrese Hunter as well, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't do a whole lot defensively, right? No. Allen had trouble. He had foul trouble in the first half. Dussault had foul trouble in the second half. But I didn't think that they made Creighton play out of their style, out of their comfort zone. You know, the one thing that I did see that I thought they did a great job at was they really pushed Creighton's offense outside the three-point line and away from the free throw extended. And so, you know, we started to see in the second half where Ryan Nembhard was taking over, because they had pushed the offense so far up the floor towards half court.
There's just so much space.
So much space. And Nembhard talked about this in the post game. He said, I mean, I just had free driving lanes, right? If I could beat my man, I had the rim, and there's no help. And so that's where we saw some of those.
Consistently beat his man. I mean,
he did. I mean, he's so fast, it's hard to stay in front of him when you're guarding him, you know, 40 feet from the basket. And so they did a good job of getting Creighton out of the half court part of their offense, where they want to stay around the 3-point line, have some of those dribble handoffs, right? Some of the kind of dribble handoff options with back cuts and then another guy filling space. But I just didn't think, from a shot perspective, I thought Creighton got the looks that they needed to in order to win the game, right? If Baylor doesn't start 0 of 9, if Trey Alexander doesn't go 0 of 8, if Arthur Kaluma doesn't disappear in the second half, right? That game is won by Creighton pretty handily, in my opinion. Again, just not super impressed with Texas, especially offensively. I mean, they took some bad shots.
They're not a good really offensive team. I think they're pretty limited offensively. And that's, listen, outside of Gonzaga, they hadn't played anyone. at all this year before Creighton, and they as a team were still only shooting 30% from three. This is going to be a limited offensive team. If you can't shoot it well against the Texas Rio Grande Valleys of the world, you're going to have trouble. Okay, so I do think this is a Texas team that is limited offensively, especially when they're not able to turn you over and get their points that way. We kind of saw the same thing out of Texas Tech, which makes sense. You've got the Coach Beard DNA still at Texas Tech. You've got it at Texas here. The half-court offense leaves quite a bit to be desired from both of those. Mm-hmm. If you're not scoring in transition, you're maybe not scoring. And the fact that Creighton only gave up 8 turnovers really helped them. Now, they gave a little bit of that back by not shooting the ball well at all. I mean, what did it end up being? 4 for 27 from three? If they go even a reasonable, not good shooting night, but let's say they go 9 for 27, that's 33%. That is still a below average shooting night, right? They win this game going away. Like, that's just – so, I don't take too much from it. I don't know. I'll have to ask one of the guys. I thought it had to be something to do with the sight lines of the building not being very good for it to look that bad.
Yeah, there were multiple times that even in the first half, right? I one play in particular stands out. End of half coming up, Ryan Nemhard backs everybody out. He hits a killer crossover right to left, about an elbow, 14-foot elbow jumper as time's expiring at halftime, and he just misses the rim.
Completely. Everything. Just everything.
And he's wide open. He had a little shimmy shake, right to left cross in the gym jumper by himself, and he didn't even draw iron. And, that's, you're just like, you start scratching your head. And it's so much to do with the confidence and the contagiousness of shooting, right? You see one of your teammates make a tough jumper, see the ball go through, that thing comes through, makes that splash sound that everybody's accustomed to of hearing on TNT. On Thursday nights, right? But when it doesn't happen, it goes the opposite way, right? When you see a guy like Trey Alexander who didn't find the bottom of the bucket all night, right? You see a guy like Baylor Shireman start 0 of 9 from the floor. It's hard to have confidence to shoot. And now Texas's defense can really pack the paint. And that's what we saw. They tried to get back to Kalkbrenner in the second half, and they were playing high side, coming with a low side double. And trying to turn them over. And now there's basically just baiting Creighton to shoot threes. And you're so hesitant. You don't have that same let it fly mentality. Mm-hmm. And now you're just second guessing that shot even while you're shooting the ball.
So let's just take a step back here and talk about all these things in a big picture. Okay. So Trey Alexander, who has been probably your second best guard after Ryan Nemhard, goes 0 for 8, gives you basically nothing offensively. Now, Texas was really keying in on him and they were making his life difficult on both ends, but you get nothing out of Trey Alexander. Arthur Kaluma, you get nothing in the second half out of. Baylor Shireman has one of the worst shooting performances of his career, 4 for 14 from the field, 3 for 13 from 3-point range. And all of that happened. And against the number two team in the country in a true road game, they still had a shot to tie it in the last 30 seconds. Like, listen, if you had listed all of those things off, I'd have said, yeah, Creighton lost that game by 20, minimum. Right? Yeah. That speaks to the strength of this team. That's why I say I'm not concerned about either loss, because they played terrible against Texas. I mean, their ceiling of how they can play is so much higher than that. They got nothing out of the bench whatsoever, which we're going to have to talk about. They got nothing from some of their key contributors here. And they still had a shot to tie it with 30 seconds left against the number two team in the country in a true road game. Like, who does that? That shouldn't even be possible. So overall, I'm actually encouraged by the strength of this team overall. I think they are in the neighborhood of exactly who we thought they could be in terms of having Final Four potential. Obviously, you would have liked to get at least one of those two, but I think they established themselves as a legitimate top five, top 10 type team in the country.
Yeah, no, I think you're completely right here, Ravi. It's there's nothing to be discouraged about, right? Obviously, the expectation is you go on the road and you win those games, right? Doesn't matter how bad you play, right? The expectation this season is to go win. And so they're going to have to start finding that in their DNA, right? And going on the road to play at places like UConn and like mm-hmm. Xavier and like Villanova, at maybe even Marquette. I mean, gosh, we're going to do a quick Big East recap too. But, they're going to have to find ways to win games that aren't their normal style, that don't just go 100% their way. And again, that margin for error is so small when you're playing a top five team in the country. And so, kudos to Texas, kudos to Arizona, and you're not making shots. And so they've got to find a way to step up in those big games and knock those shots down. Right.
Yeah.
It can't just be at home. It can't just be, when things are going well. It's like, and that's where you lean on a guy like Baylor Shireman. Right. And, he's going to have a couple off nights this season, mm-hmm. but that's your guy. And you expect him to come out in that Texas game and just keep firing like he was in Maui. And when that doesn't happen, you've got to readjust. Right. You've got to figure out another way to manufacture points and another way to try to figure out a way to win, because their defense was good. I mean, their defense was good enough to win that game too. There's a couple breakdowns late, but their defense was good enough. And Texas is limited offensively to the point where, they didn't have to go out and score 90 points to win that game. Boy, they needed 75 points.
Yeah, they needed to get to 70, 75. Obviously 65 would have done it at this point. But, most nights Creighton's going to be able to get 75 on just about everybody. And the fact that they weren't able to, just it was a bad night. I do want to touch on a couple things kind of from that stretch of games that we kind of started talking about, but I want to nail these down a little bit better. Let's start with Arthur Kaluma. So... Yep. A lot of hype about Arthur coming into this season. He missed a lot of the offseason just with, I think it was a knee that he was kind of dealing with, getting back healthy and everything. He hasn't looked great this year. I think the expected jump in production from him and the expected abilities to kind of create his own shots and things like that have maybe gotten in his head a little bit. He's over dribbling a lot. He's got moments where you're like, okay, there's a little bit there. I see it, but it appears as though he's having a real hard time kind of finding either his spot with this team or what exactly this team needs out of him. What have you seen so far from Arthur, and what do you think he can do to kind of get on track?
Well, his athleticism was neutralized in the last three matchups, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hard for him. It's been very hard for him to find a rhythm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can tell he's extremely conscious about where he's shooting the ball, and he's open for three and he's passing it up, right? But then he comes back down and he takes a fadeaway contested two from 17 feet. Mm-hmm. And so he's just having a really difficult time finding his spot in this offense with so much talent around him, right? And it's, you don't have to dribble the ball every time you touch it, right? Sometimes the best offense is to swing it so quickly that the defense has to rotate, and now somebody is driving and creating a shot for you. And that's just been hard for him to adjust to. Obviously, the knee injury is impacting him from an offseason that was limited. And, as we're in the first 10 games of the season, you would expect the rust to start to fall off. What's hard is that he just kind of disappears, right? Yeah, and he does. He's almost forgettable. And you can't have that out of your top NBA prospect. He has
probably
to be
your most talented guy.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And he has to have a fingerprint on the game at all times. The opposing team should be worried about what he's doing every single possession. And it just doesn't seem like there's that dominance or kind of that like urgency to be the guy. You know, I thought he really struggled in Maui. I mean,
yeah,
he was having a hard time dribbling. He was having a hard time passing. And then he was really bad defensively. And, mm-hmm. and it all kind of snowballed into what was probably the worst three-game stretch that we've seen from him in his 2 years at Creighton.
Yeah, so it's interesting. A couple interesting things there. I think, honestly, he almost needs to go back to how he was playing last year before, you know, before the shot creation kind of became a thing, before some of this hype got kind of going a little bit about him as an NBA prospect. I really think that because of the makeup of this team, they actually need Arthur Kaluma to kind of be like a utility guy, in the sense that there's going to be better options for guys to create shots besides Arthur. Obviously, Nembhard's one. Trey most nights is going to be two in terms of creating a shot for themselves. In terms of creating a shot for someone else, it's going to be Nembhard and Shireman are one and two. And then in terms of wanting to get guys' looks off of those, it's going to be probably Kalkbrenner number one in trying to get him his own looks. So with that's a lot of guys that need the ball in that offense to kind of do what they do best. There was a lot of times last year when Art was the best when he was just being like a super high energy guy, which is he's more skilled than that, but that's how he needs mm-hmm. to play, I think, within this team to take advantage of his skill set, right? He can do more than that. I understand that. But right now, as he's kind of struggling to find a place, he needs to re-embrace kind of that role, I think, in order to get comfortable again and then start to insert himself a little bit more in terms of, okay, now I'm comfortable. Now I'm kind of in the flow of the offense. I'm kind of in the flow of the team. Now here's a good spot where I could maybe try and get to the rim, or here's a good spot where I could back a guy down and take a turnaround. Rather than that being the core of his game, I think that should be kind of the extra stuff that he does. Where right now it seems like he's trying to make that the main portion of his game, and it's not working for Creighton right now. That's on the offensive side. On the defensive side, he was really, really bad in Maui, especially against Arizona. I talked about those rotations earlier. A lot of times that was him who was not rotating down to help out Kalkbrenner when Kalkbrenner was helping out on drivers. So that was a huge problem. He needs to be focused defensively because physically he should be able to handle just about anything any team throws at him. It's all about focus for him defensively. So that part was really frustrating. I'll be interested to see how this looks moving forward when we have this little stretch of a few games where the competition level isn't quite as high. You got Nebraska, BYU, Arizona State, not quite as high as it was over the last four games. I'll be really interested to see if he's able to kind of find his footing over that stretch.
Yeah, no, this is a critical time for him. And it's, you know, it's weird saying that on December 3rd, right? But he's got to get his mojo back.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's got to find himself. And again, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's basically, you know, almost scored in double figures in every single game this season, right? But
it hasn't looked great.
And, you know, most of those came in the first half on Thursday, and there's nothing that we got out of him that Creighton's team got out of him in the second half against Texas. But get yourself going defensively, right?
Yeah.
Make a play, block, you know, chase down, block, whatever it is. Use that athleticism to mm-hmm. spur that offense to get yourself going, because then, you know, you get this team out running, and, you know, he hits a transition three, or, you know, Baylor finds him in transition. He hits that ball fake, one dribble, and tomahawks, right? That's the stuff that can get you, mm-hmm. that get you going. And so, like you said, in these next, you know, 3-4 games that aren't against top 25 teams, right? It'll be nice for him to try to get his juice back, right? He needs some of that Michael's secret stuff, and we'd love to see him get back to the level he was at the end of last season.
Yeah, we would love to see the Arthur that we had in the NCAA tournament for sure. I do say I would love it if he just like self-imposed like a two dribble rule for just the next few games. Just be like, hey, I'm not dribbling more than twice at any time. If I can't get where I'm trying to go in two dribbles, I'm giving it up. That's the rule until you kind of get comfortable. Because it seems like he's just kind of in his head a little bit there. I did want to talk one more specific about kind of what we saw the last four games here, and that's the bench production. The bench production was the depth of this team was we thought a strength. It's been kind of clear so far that it's the starting five and then everybody else at this point in the season. Now, I think part of that's the matchups and the way things went early, but I want to start with Sharif Mitchell. I don't know how much they can continue experimenting with him at the back or a backup point guard minutes. Where are you at with that?
Yeah, I think again, I'm going to go back to that perspective or lens conversation of over the last four games, right? It's very rare that a team has to play four top 25 teams in a row. So you are going to see a heavier minutes load with your starting five. I don't want people to think, oh gosh, these next four or five guys, they can't even dribble the basketball, because clearly that's not the case. It's just the caliber of competition that Creighton has played has forced them to have their best five guys on the floor. What has been apparent is that those five guys are, I mean, they're five of the top 100 guys in the country.
Yeah,
And
I mean they were
they're
ranked
ranked
that way
there
by
for a reason.
ESPN. Yeah,
Yeah.
and a lot
But
of
to your
people have said they might be the best starting five in the country. So there is going to be a drop off. My
Yes.
concern with Sharif specifically is that the plus that he gives you on defense does not outweigh what has been really shaky offensive play so far.
Yeah. I think a lot of this has to go with him not playing last year, right? I mean, it's so hard to just insert yourself, especially on the offensive end, when you're known as a defensive player, a defensive on-ball stopper, to then say, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna fit in perfectly with these guys offensively." And it's been hard to watch, as an analyst, as a Blue Jay fan, because you want the young man to succeed, right? Omaha kid, you want him to be successful, and he just it's been. When that second team comes on, or there's a mix of, Sharif and Frederick with, and Mason with, let's say, Baylor and Trey. That seems to be kind of the lineup they're going with right now. They're just not getting enough offensive production. There's a clear drop off, and it's almost like they've moved Sharif to the two guard and let Trey play the one. And so he's now Sharif's playing off the ball and not handling the rock, and he's not a shooter, right? And he's a small guard, so he's not going to finish around the rim, and it's just really difficult for him to find minutes right now.
Yeah, and so I wonder, and I know the staff trusts Sharif. I know they love Sharif. I just wonder if you're looking at, okay, Trey and Baylor are probably going to end up being our kind of either backup point guard or primary playmaker, however you want to put it. You're probably going to have to rely on those guys more than you do Sharif. Maybe if you're moving Sharif to the two anyway, maybe Ben Stolzberg makes more sense in those minutes. We know Stolzberg is a bucket. He's a bigger bodied guy. I understand they probably don't trust him defensively the same way, but if you are putting out a unit that's a total nothing burger offensively, you lose games that way. What did we say when we started this, right? We had a couple of media timeout stretches where Creighton couldn't score. And after that, that's why they lost the game in both instances. So, like, if you can't have 5 minute droughts scoring the ball or scoring the basketball, so I mean, to me, I don't know how much longer you can watch the Sharif thing happen, and I don't know how much longer you can wait for him to maybe try and knock the rust off from not playing for a year when you've got a guy that you know he can do some things offensively. It's like, yeah, he's probably going to make some mistakes on the defensive end, but I have a lot of confidence in Ben Stolzberg offensively. I think he can play at that level offensively right now, and that's going to be really hard to leave on the bench when you're watching this second unit that cannot score.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even just having an extra shooter out on the floor, right? Where
that's what I mean. I'm not asking Ben to play point guard.
No, you're not asking him to create his own shot. You're basically saying, hey, man, you're in there when Trey's driving to the rim. You need to relocate to the corner or to the wing and be ready to knock down some jumpers. And that's honestly, we thought that Francisco was going to be that guy, right? We thought Francisco was going to be that guy off the bench, was going to come in, knock down two or three threes a game. And he just hasn't been, not what was advertised, but he hasn't been himself, right? You've seen, I've watched film of him at TCU.
That he's a 40% career three-point shooter.
Yeah, and it's not like the CHI rims aren't friendly. So we got to get him going as well. I mean, obviously there hasn't been many games at home, but you know, it is really difficult, right? As a guy that did come off the bench, right? Mm-hmm. It is hard to get yourself in a rhythm just in the game, but also throughout the course of the season where I might play, you know, 14, 15 minutes one night, but the next night I only play five. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bench production in the last two games, I mean, those guys, they're not even playing double digit minutes.
No.
Right. They're getting two, like 3 minute stretches, and that's it.
Yeah. That's been the kind of the most confusing part to me. And I am going to put part of this on Mac. I don't think he's put them in great positions because he's been putting like three guys on like three bench guys in at a time in the first half. And he said he wasn't going to do that after like the first game of the season. And he's continued to do that. I mean, the first subbing pattern with against Texas was King, Bello, and Miller all at the same time. And that's just not, you can't put three bench guys in against the number two team in the country because it doesn't allow any of them to perform at their highest ability. Like you need to stagger those minutes better. Like Frederick King needs to be in there with four starters. Mason Miller needs to be in there with four starters. When Mason Miller's played with starters, he's looked like a starter. Like he's looked good.
Yeah.
But when he plays with a majority bench unit, he looks like a totally different guy. And so you can't do that. You're making less out of your bench than they actually are. And Bello struggled. I understand that because he's been in some starter units or units of mostly starters, and he's been in some bench units, and he's struggled in both. He really needs to find a comfort level with his shot within the offense. But, like, Coach Mack is not doing these guys any favors right now by putting them in three bench unit guys at a time. And I get he probably wants to get them some seasoning, but you got to grab – like, you got to grab these opportunities too and get some wins. If you can get a win against number two overall in a true road game, like, come on, man, what are we doing here? And so that's been a little frustrating for me because I fully believe that Mason Miller is good enough to contribute to this team, but he needs to play with starters like that. Most bench guys aren't good enough to carry a bench unit. Like that's a super rare quality to have in a guy. And I don't think any of Creighton's bench guys are there right now. I think they've got guys that could be contributors, but I don't think they have a single guy that is a carry a second unit type guy. And when you don't have that, you have to be really strategic in staggering minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to, right? There's two approaches here. You put three bench guys in with two starters and you say, Trey or Arthur, whatever it is, like, it's your time to cook, right? Like if you want to get some shots up, like here is your time, or whoever's got the hot hand, like this is your moment to go create. And those second team guys are there to make sure that that guy is getting shots on possession. Right. And that's not happening. Or what you do is you stagger the minutes, just like you were talking about, Robbie, and you basically are subbing one in and one out for the starters for all 20 minutes, right? Or maybe it's 15 of those minutes. And maybe it is giving a guy like Arthur or Kalkbrenner a break really early in the first half and really early in the second half, right? But they have to be those second team guys. They need to be one or two instead of three or four coming in at the same time.
Yeah, you really, you to me, and listen, I think there's value to each approach, but we've seen the multiple bench guys come in at once approach, and it hasn't really worked for Creighton. That's why I'm suggesting the other approach, right? Like, there are instances where each can work, and I know you probably want to maximize the number of minutes that your really good starting five can play together. But here's the thing. I don't think the drop-off outside of Nembhard and Kalkbrenner probably, I don't think the drop-off from one guy to the next, if it's just one guy, is huge, right? Like, I feel like I could convince you that if you put Miller in for some Kaluma minutes early with the other starting five, like, that's an interesting lineup, and I think you could get something out of that, right? Especially the way Art's playing right now. That might not be terrible. You put in a dead-eye shooter and a 6'9 guy that loves to rebound and Mason Miller in for Kaluma, who's just been, like, over-dribbling and having defensive lapses. Like, you can't even pin Miller's defense on it because Kaluma's not been playing good defense, right? So you're telling me that's not a lineup that you could probably continue to build a lead with? I understand, like, Nembhard's probably going to have to play 35 minutes a night against quality opponents for the rest of the way. That's just how it's going to be, right? But you don't have to play Kaluma 35 minutes probably. You probably are going to have to play Trey a decent amount, but you can find some times to, okay, stick in Bello here for 2 minutes, stick in Stolzberg here for a couple minutes, and kind of buy yourself a little bit of time. You could even theoretically run kind of a big lineup and have Shireman be your guard and have forwards of Miller and Kaluma and Kalkbrenner and Nembhard in there, and that'd be kind of a weirdly enormous lineup, but that could maybe work. And Frederick King can't play with other backups. Like, that's just, he has to play with starters only. I think he can do some things when starters are in there, but when it's kind of gets disjointed with the rest of the bench group in there, then Frederick King isn't good enough to overcome that right now. And listen, I understand he's a freshman. He hasn't played basketball that long. This is not an indictment on Frederick King. This is the rotations have to work a little bit better to get the most out of your bench guys, because I don't think it's sustainable to get nothing out of your bench guys for the entire season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And maybe it's a, hey, why don't we let Kalkbrenner go to work for, you know, 6-7 minutes at a time, give him a spell for 2-3 minutes, let him go to work for 7-8 minutes again, give him a spell for two, right? And maybe you're subbing Frederick in more often as opposed to letting him play longer stints. But yeah, it is hard. It is hard. I mean, it's hard for Mac to figure this out. And I, you know, I have full confidence that he will, that this coaching staff will figure it out. But like you said, Robbie, I think the next couple games are going to be pretty critical to the success of getting the bench back into this rotation, getting these guys some extended minutes where they actually feel like they're part of the game, as opposed to just being thrown in last minute because so-and-so looks tired. They've got to be a little bit more strategic about that, especially as they play these non-top 25 teams.
Yeah, and I mean, I think there's another option in here as well, to give Kalkbrenner a spell, and that is, we saw it briefly and for the very first time against Texas, is a small ball lineup. You've got the length at the forward spots, that's a plausible thing to run out against certain teams, where you've got an Arthur Kaluma, you've got a Mason Miller, you've got Trey Alexander, Bello, and Nembhard, where you could run out a lineup that's still got pretty decent length and athleticism. You've got some shooting in there, and maybe you give a different look to teams. You give maybe some different offensive and defensive looks that people have to prepare for, and you're able to give Kalkbrenner a breath without having to trust that Frederick King can hold up against a top five team in the country, because that's asking a lot out of a true freshman at this point.
Yeah, no, it is. I'm going to do a quick sidebar here, Ravi, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can we figure out how to do the nice little Kansas high low over the top pass with the big to big.
Oh my gosh.
Because we have
terrible
had
at it.
Probably
terrible
four,
at it.
4 to 5 looks a game where it's just come off the ball screen, drag it deep, roll replace, and you've got big on big, and you're basically just above the free throw line, and you're just throwing a little touch pass up to the rim. And I think we're over. I think we actually are might be
have
a
not
negative
completed
percentage.
One. Yeah.
Not completed one, and it has been wide open every time. And it's like they're either making the wrong read or they're throwing a bad pass. And so the timing mm-hmm. there is just not synced up, but it's there. And I mean, that's let's talk about a couple extra points that could have been used in that game at Texas. It's like there's 6 to 8 points where you've got defense out of position. You've got a seal down low with a guy who's 7-1. Throw him the basketball so he can just put it in the hoop.
So I think part of that is the guys that end up in that position, right? You need Shireman making that pass. Kaluma seems to really, really struggle with it. Shireman is... yeah. Almost the same size as Kaluma, and he's by far the best passer on the team. Like that, mm-hmm. you need to find a way to get Shireman in that high spot of the high low so that he can just dump it down to Kalkbrenner. That should not be that hard to figure out how to get Shireman into that spot. And you're talking just free points. You're going to get a couple looks every half where it's just like, boom, that's 8 points total in the game right now. We just got for free, right? And Creighton's undefeated mm-hmm. if that happens, right? Like, let's just figure a way to get Baylor in the high spot, and he will just let Kalkbrenner eat. Like, he will just let him eat. That's a really good point. You know, there's some things that – and listen, I have a great deal of faith in this coaching staff. So when we're pointing out these things, it's not necessarily to say – oh, well, the coaching staff needs to do this or the coaching staff needs to do that. I understand they kind of go through this process of tinkering with things, seeing what works, and figuring out, okay, what lineups play well together. There are some things that, you know, as an analyst, as a fan, you kind of want to be like, okay, that's not working. Let's move on faster. You know, like mm-hmm. let's move on from from those things a little bit faster. But you also, you know, coaches have guys they trust that they give the benefit of the doubt to. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. Sometimes mm-hmm. they wait a little bit too long to make a move on somebody that they have a trust for because of either their relationship or what they see in practice or whatever. Sometimes it just doesn't translate to games. And so this is just us observing. And I'm confident by the time, you know, Creighton gets into the middle of Big East play, then we'll be really, really happy with how this team's playing. But right now you look at it and be like, man, would have been really nice to get a win against one, either Arizona or Texas.
Yeah, it would have been, but now we get to turn our sights to our friendly foes, 45 minutes down the road.
Yeah, we've got Nebraska on Sunday, need to beat them by a million.
Robbie, I'm looking at my phone. It's starting to blow up here, and our friend group chat is Jay's by a million. That's the title. That's the title of our group chat. So it's funny that you say that.
Yes, you know, you always expect to beat Nebraska. You always expect to beat them pretty soundly. This year is no different. Creighton's way better than Nebraska. This is a game they need to get. This is a game they probably should be able to figure some things out with before they head out to Vegas for BYU and Arizona State. So you'd like to have this be, you know, not an easy performance, but a performance where you can figure out some of the things that have been ailing Creighton so far this year. I'm going to be honest, I don't have a ton of breakdown on Nebraska right now. I am doing the pregame show tomorrow, but Nebraska's bad. That's all you need to know. They're not a very good basketball team.
Well, I think the most important thing here is it's not necessarily the opponent, but it's about getting right. It's about getting yourself back in that winning mentality. And there's nothing better than, you know, being away for basically a week of Thanksgiving, losing it, you know, you end up losing that last game, you're tired, get a week off, go on the road again. And it's like, seems like it's been, gosh, it's been 3+ weeks since we've been at a home game. And now you've got a chance for, you know, your fan base to come out on a Sunday afternoon for, you know, what is seemingly a big game because it's in-state rival at Nebraska. But I'm excited for the electricity of the crowd and the energy of the crowd to get these guys going because I think they need that, right? And it's hard when you're playing away from home and you don't have your fans, you're not in your locker room, you can't just go to your dorm room after the game's over and celebrate a win. But they need to come home and they need to get back on the train and get back on the winning ways.
Yep, absolutely. That's about all I've got in terms of breaking things down. You want to do our life update and call it a day?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Life update. Ravi and I have been so incredibly busy that we apologize to each other because we couldn't even find
time. We've been trying to schedule this for like a week and a half.
It's been so bad. It's been so bad. Yeah, I obviously got the little one at home and just started a business a couple months ago. So we apologize deeply to all of our millions of listeners that we have. But it has been difficult for us to get together. But it's been a good couple weeks. Had a great Thanksgiving and now just gearing up for a little Christmas time. How about yourself, bud?
No, same. Just super busy. I've been filling in, obviously Damon Benning left 1620 a couple months ago. I've basically been filling in on the mornings since
then.
Did they
give you that job yet, man? Did they give you that job?
Not yet. We're still waiting on it. We're still waiting on them.
What do you need from me? Is there anything that we can do here at Jays 24/7 to make that happen?
Because maybe we work your Creighton back channels and be like, hey, listen, Creighton's pulling their funding unless you hire Ravi as your full-time guy. Maybe we could make that happen. That might move the needle a bit.
I think you know this, but I don't have that much pull, Ravi. I'm not the right guy to talk to about that.
Somebody get Marcus on the phone. Where's Marcus Blossom?
Let's get Marcus on the phone.
No, so I've been doing that, which means and still working my day job. So there's some pretty long days in there. Which make it a little challenging to get on here and record the pod, but it's been fun. I love doing it, and you know, we'll try and schedule these a little bit more regularly. Hopefully, we can find a time that works for us. But no, we do appreciate everybody that listens, and apologize for the gap between episode 1 and 2. Hopefully, I think we're shooting to get one out a week. So hopefully. We can get on a schedule here that'll work for us. But no, life is good in general, just really, really busy.
Yes, sir.
Well, let's call it a day there. You've got Nebraska coming up tomorrow. And oh, by the way, you've got a Creighton men's soccer team in the Final Four, beating Duke in
let's
the Elite Eight on the road. The Jays are headed to the College Cup. First time since 2012. Coach Torres led them there as a player. He's taken them back as a coach. Just an awesome story. They're on a historic run in the postseason from the Big East tournament now into the NCAA tournament. They are just getting it done. So best of luck to Coach Torres and the boys in the College Cup. And I think it might be in Kansas City this year. So, you know, maybe we pop on down.
Ooh, maybe we need to do our next podcast.
We'll do it live.
Kansas City. Live. Run one. From midfield.
Did I make that up? Is it actually in Kansas City? Are you looking right now?
I don't know. I'm trying to look it up. I am.
I'm Googling.
No, it's in North Carolina. It's in North
Carolina. So I wasn't close. I was not close. I thought it's been in Kansas City in the past. Am I just making things up?
I think you're just making things up.
That's entirely possible. That's entirely possible.
Hey, like you said, you're really busy. You're a really busy guy. So I don't expect you to be 100%. Okay. But I appreciate the just jumping in to like think that it was in Kansas City. You had me convinced.
Listen,
like,
I was ready to drive.
I was ready to hop in the car and drive down 2.5 hours to go watch some soccer next week.
I don't know why. Just in my head, it just seems so sure. It's like, yep, definitely in Kansas City. You should say that. Yeah. but no, congrats.
what a crazy run for those guys, right? They barely make the Big East tournament. And yes. Now, what is it? Was that 8 in a row?
Seven in a row. 3 in the Big East, 4 to get to the Final Four here in the NCAA tournament. They beat the number 1 ranked team in the country in Washington. Duke was number 4. Tulsa was like number 10 or 12 or something. Yeah. So they're just knocking out. They're just giant killers out here. And then they're, I believe, waiting on the winner of the Syracuse match. I don't remember who Syracuse is playing off the top of my head. I wanted to say I saw Vermont, but that doesn't sound right. Maybe Vermont's good at soccer.
I actually think I just saw that, and I think Vermont is correct.
So Syracuse is basically been the second best team all year after Washington. So that would be obviously a tough task for Creighton. But listen, they've been having tall tasks this entire postseason, and they've been knocking them all off. So hopefully they're able to get that done. So a little soccer to top off your Let It Fly podcast today. But for Taylor Stormberg, I'm Robbie Lula. This has been the Let It Fly podcast. And hopefully, we're crossing our fingers, we'll talk to you again next week.
We'll see you next week. See ya.